We are in business with Anita Heck tonight, Life History Services. We're going to be talking about how to capture your life history and giving you tips on that as well as learning about her business. I'm Jody Glenn Patrick, publisher in Business Magazine.
And I'm Joan Gilman, Office of Corporate Relations at the UW. Welcome. Tell me, what is life history?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the program. I'm delighted to be here. Life history work encompasses a lot of different kinds of work that is intended to capture and preserve the stories of somebody's life. It can be the story of their personal life, of their working life. It could be a family history. And basically the work that I do through Life History Services is a variety of all of that. We capture and document stories in a variety of formats that can be print productions or audio and video recordings or multimedia formats that include the web.
Why'd you go into this business?
That's a long story.
We have time.
Well, I guess it all goes back to my childhood. I grew up in a family of immigrants, like a lot of Americans. My parents were both born in Germany, and they were Holocaust refugees. Their families left Europe in 1933, and my parents were raised mainly in Latin America, and then when they met and married, they moved across the border into South Texas and had a family. And I grew up speaking English. My parents only spoke English to us. This is true of a lot of immigrant families. They spoke German to their parents. They spoke Spanish to each other.
Wow.
So I was confused. And I kind of trace my interest in family history back to that personal experience of growing up and really not knowing a lot, partly in due to the traumatic history of my family, and partly due to just the fact that I think the United States is sort of a forward-looking country where a lot of people have come from immigrant backgrounds but aren't that connected to them. And so when I was a young adult, I studied history. I got a degree at the UW here. I also went and got a master's in clinical social work because I was interested in people and their stories and healing from trauma. And I also worked in the field of theater and storytelling, and I think at a certain point, all of it
converged.
And mm-hmm. It wasn't that I was somebody who knew when I was five that I wanted to be a doctor. I had no idea, and as is true for many people, I think, in life, it's not necessarily what you think is going to happen that actually happens to you. In any case, I, in 1995, found out about the Spielberg Foundation, which was a foundation set up by Steven Spielberg after he filmed Schindler's List and had been contacted by, you know, hundreds of thousands of Holocaust survivors who wanted to tell him their story. And he set up a foundation to record stories on videotape of Holocaust survivors around the world. And I went through a training to become a volunteer interviewer. And then went to Mexico City, which is where my family had been refugees, and recorded a lot of stories. That was all on a volunteer basis. It was a wonderful experience, and after 6 months of doing that, I thought, I think I might want to try and make a living doing this. I'd never heard of anybody becoming an oral historian in the private sector, but I started talking it up, and I got my first gig through a friend of mine who wanted me to interview her father, who had a very interesting life history. And I wrote his memoir. And it sort of evolved from there. I started officially my business in 1997 when I was living in San Francisco. And I'm still in business today.
Now, we have a similar interest in business. I have a genealogy company, and I do research family lines and first source documents and then also write it. I don't do any of the video, and I haven't got into the the personal interviews other than to document the written things that I'm doing writing. But I'm fascinated with the and very interested in, actually, the applications for the video, because you capture the person and their expressions, and you can tell what's most important to them and least important to them. Well, if you ask a question, they gloss over it. So it seems like a you know, the only question I have is, where are you getting clients? Because it is hard, particularly in a recession. Mm-hmm. You know, when people are giving up so much, we've asked this of every business.
She has some very interesting clients. Not all of them are alive.
Yeah.
But talk about the one that you just finished with the senator.
Well, this was an interesting business story because it was one of those jobs that I didn't go looking for. It mm-hmm. came to me. And in fact, that's sort of the million-dollar question in my industry, how do you get clients? Because it is such a personalized service that really most of my work comes through word of mouth. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to meet me usually to develop a sense of trust and rapport that they're going to be willing to share personal stories. The project that I've been working on for the Historical Society of Wisconsin came through another oral historian who I know who had been contacted by the Historical Society because they were looking for somebody to conduct oral histories, and he wasn't available, so mm-hmm. he passed on my name. This particular project was unusual in that it is an oral history archive of somebody who's no longer alive, and I often interview people who are alive about their own lives, but this was a well-known Wisconsin senator, Senator Bill Proxmeyer, who served in the Senate for 6 terms. Mm-hmm. And died in 2005, and his wife had for many years been interested in capturing the stories of his Senate career as well as his life history. And so the Historical Society subcontracted with me to interview people who surrounded him. Mm-hmm. And these were his family members, his staffers, and other politicians. This particular archive was not video. They chose to do it in audio, which a lot of historical archives accept more readily than digital video.
Right.
And in many cases, I was sad that we didn't capture people on video because you get so much from the visual.
Exactly.
And I think the
depth.
Yeah, you get expressions that you mm-hmm. would otherwise not see. I mean, it's the same with radio. We're hearing our voices, but we're not seeing our faces. We see each other, but other people can't see us, which may be a good thing. but when I'm
today it is.
When I'm working with families, this is really one of the first questions that needs to be answered, which is the format question. You know, do you want mm-hmm. something in print? Do you want something in audio or in video or in a combination of both? And I normally suggest all of it because mm-hmm. I think the written word, you know, has the proven longevity of centuries. We really don't know what a DVD or a CD is going to turn into in 100 years.
Unless you're able to translate it. And every time another media comes out, you have to translate the file.
Yep.
I've got a file right now. I don't even know how to do it. And it's one of those VHS tapes that I have. Well, I want to turn that into video. I don't know how to do that.
I can do that for you.
Can you?
Yes,
good. I'm going to talk to you about that.
Well, one of the reasons that I think people use a personal historian like myself is because we stay abreast of the technology.
Exactly.
And the other part of the truth of our media world, I think, is that we haven't lost television programs. We haven't lost important musical recordings. There's an entire industry to support the
transfer. That's what I'm saying, the translations. So.
One of the ways that I try and encourage families to make sure that they don't lose these documents once they're produced is to make sure that they dedicate the documents to somebody in the next generation.
Right.
Who's then going to be responsible.
The caregiver.
Yeah. Who's going to carry the torch.
Yeah, I think you need a trustee for something that important. We're going to be right back with Anita Hecht, Life History Services. I've got lots of questions for her. I'm sure you do, too. I hope we ask yours. We are in business with Anita Hecht. We're talking about Life History Services. That's her business. And we're getting some hints on what it would be to get your history or the one that you, someone that you loved. Usually we're trying to capture somebody else's history. Not enough of us think about capturing our own, I think, as we go along. We leave that to the next generation, maybe in error. We're going to be passed down quite a bit different than we really were, maybe. I'm Jody Glenn-Patrick, publisher of In Business Magazine.
Joan Gilman, Office of Corporate Relations at the UW. What kind of skills do you need to do this work?
A lot of people come with different skills to the field of personal history since it's not a regulated field. I would say a lot of us come with writing backgrounds, interviewing backgrounds. I personally come with a history degree and a clinical social work degree. I've done a lot of writing and public speaking. Others are videographers. Others are audio engineers. I think what's most important is a sincere interest in people and an ability to listen actively and to be a non-judgmental presence. I mean, what we're asking people to do is to tell the meaningful stories of their lives, not the glossy, rose-colored ones necessarily. And so it's important when I talk to people who want to become personal historians that I try and talk about what it means to take in somebody. I mean, I was trained as a therapist, so I think that helps me in dealing with people's pain and not only their, you know, happy memories. Because mm-hmm. if we're going to get a full story, life is full of, you know,
the ups
successes,
and the downs.
Ups and the downs. There's lots of other skills. I mean, I stay abreast of technology because, after all, we're interested in creating heirlooms that are going to last much longer than we are.
Right.
And I think writing and communication skills are very important. Certainly, being self-employed, you know, all of the business skills are important to have. That's probably the thing that I was weakest in when I started my business because I didn't consider myself an entrepreneur.
And you don't have pricing models out there.
There are no pricing models, and you'll find a huge variety of, you know,
yeah.
people who...
I mean, some people think for $20, you right. know, they can get this book, and other people think for it's going to cost $2,000, mm-hmm. surely, to go interview everybody. Nobody really has an idea what this costs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's your business. You make a living at this.
Yeah. And when I came into this personally, I thought, well, I want to make at least as much as I can as a clinical social worker, which isn't necessarily a huge income. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's overhead. And as business people know, you know, I have to buy my own health insurance and I have to buy all of my own equipment. There's support staff. I use mainly independent contractors. So for mm-hmm. my video project, I'll hire a video editor who is also trying to make a living wage. So when I'm doing a full-scale production, it's not inexpensive. But there are people who have a couple $100s and they want me to edit their own writing mm-hmm. or they want me to do some transfers from analog to digital. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, again, it's just a matter of pricing that out and deciding mm-hmm. what is it that I need to make in order to, you know, have a living quality.
Right.
You know.
I also think a lot of businesses need to stop and think about, especially those that aren't large corporations that have to do an annual report, which in a sense is the history of that year. And mm-hmm. so they have a collection that tells a bit of the story. But the other successful family businesses and independent
yeah.
businesses who've been in business 25, 50, 100 years, you know, really need to stop and think about the legacy that they need to pass on. And maybe every 25 years they should update it.
Well, it's true. I did, just as an example of that, Fauerbach Beer. And went in and found all the documents that I could in the family history and started writing things. Found out that they did not always produce beer during Prohibition. They created health drinks that they used the malt and everything, and it was fascinating. And found out that they owned a hotel and that they had yachting exercises and
wow.
everything else, and then turned that over to Fauerbach's. But I also took pictures of all the family graves because that's part of what I'm interested in as
mm-hmm,
well,
mm-hmm.
making sure that they know, because then I find other relatives that way that they didn't
sure.
know about.
Mm.
There, you know, everybody has their own research niche. I also was a counselor, so I'm very fascinated with that. I did crisis work with people. I worked for a police department. So I wonder if there's some similarity in our characters
yes.
for why we're so fascinated
well,
with this.
There is an association of personal historians, and we always kind of joke that a lot of us are, well, women who are
yes.
interested in stories. And
there's always one in the family,
right.
don't you know?
Yeah. But I'm really glad, Joan, that you brought up the idea of family business histories, because I think you and I have talked about succession planning and you know, these businesses that people sink their lives into and their fortunes into, their entire
mm-hmm.
being into. You
their
know,
identity.
Their identity. Then they pass on, and it's a very difficult transition, I think, emotionally, too. And if there's a way to capture what their values are and what they hope for the future, this is it in terms of leaving a legacy that they that hopefully will have an impact on their descendants who may be running the company or on other people who come in
That, frankly, is the reason I'm still at In Business Magazine, because I feel that we are creating the legacy in the stories that we tell about the businesses in that moment. And when we're talking about what they've accomplished and what they've done, our Hall of Fame, et cetera, that these become things that will be handed down through the generations, the highlights, how the business works. There's all that storytelling, very unique ways.
Well, that's what I find fascinating, and it does depend on the bent. And I mean, I knew you two took a very different approach to to what you're doing, but
only because I don't do the audio. My guess is because you're a history major. I always put my stories, if I take a family history, I always put it in historical context with what is happening, because that's so important to understand the culture and what it would, what they could have taken on a pioneer trip. You know, all these little tidbits to try to give it some context. And, you know, I guess my question to you is, it must have been really haunting work doing the work that you started with Steven Spielberg. What was that like for you as a volunteer and just entering the field?
And coming from your background.
And sitting down with stories that must have resonated with you to recreate the world that your family left.
Yes, I can say it was very powerful for me. I think in terms of putting it into the context that you're talking about, I was interviewing survivors, you know, 40 years after the fact, who had often had productive lives and families, and so it was very different, I say, than when I, for example, was working as an intervention crisis counselor in social work, where I was in the middle of a trauma where kids had to come out of abusive situations. I found this work, you know, yes, depressing because you're hearing about the atrocities of war and what war has wrought on people's lives. I also found it incredibly uplifting to hear stories of how people survived these traumas and went on to lead lives and form relationships and have love and pass on beauty. And so, you know, some of the people I met were just inspirations to me because they took these experiences and what did they say their lesson was, you know, to love and forgive. There were other people who took other lessons, you know, that maybe I wouldn't have resonated so much with. But in general, the Holocaust stories were also a really good training ground for me because it was an exercise in putting certain experiences in life into sort of a context. They weren't purely about what happened to you in the concentration camp. This was about, you know, the interviews were framed in pre-war, sort of wartime and post-war context, so that you had the person's life and their relationships and their interests and their hobbies all recorded and who they were, and then war comes along and upsets everything, and there's loss and there's trauma, and then there's the post-war where there's rebuilding. And I found that really helpful, too, because so often history becomes sound bites for us and we don't get a sense of really what the entirety of somebody's life experience is. And so to have the question at the end be, so this all happened to you, what do you think about it now? How do you live with it? And what do you want to pass on? What did you learn from it? That's the part of the life history that I find really fascinating in anybody's life, now, Holocaust survivor or not. How do you make meaning from those experiences? Because what people choose to remember also varies. You know, some people are very optimistic in looking back. Other people only remember the bad stuff. And his personal history is, you know, it's storytelling. It's based on memory, which is
it's your own reality,
right? So you interview two siblings from the same family.
We see very different
parents,
memories.
Yeah. Right.
You were amazed,
and they're both telling the truth because
they're
just
truth.
Simply
they're truth,
different
yes.
realities.
Right. I think your question about what, you know, how can genealogy, I'm not sure you asked it, but I think about it, you know, how does genealogy complement life history is a really interesting one, because I think they do. And if you don't know a lot about genealogy, if you have no knowledge of even who your grandparents was, the truth is that you're going to be history to somebody else in the future. And so even if you can't research or find out anything, you know, let's say there's a Holocaust survivor whose entire family and all the records are gone, their own life story in and of itself is a historical wealth of information because they can, you know, we can talk about what it was like to go through 9/11, or we can talk about what it was like to go through, you know, the first African American president. This is going to be 100 years from now, a historic.
And, you know, mine actually started at that point where I realized I had a very serious diagnosis, and I realized at that moment that they were saying, you know, prepare. And I was thinking, I don't know anything, because my grandfather took an alias after he broke out of prison, and there are no family records, and I know 32 names. That's it. So I start now, I have 33,000 names in our family. But I did not know that when I started, and that was that thing, looking for identity, much as you got into it, looking for identity. We're going to be right back with Anita Hecht. We're talking about life history services. And I'm sure, Joan, what's the most burning question you have?
Oh, I have a lot of burning questions.
All right. Well, we're going to be right back then. We're going to find out Joan's most burning questions. Life History Services, Anita Hecht, in business with Jody and Joan on WTDY. We are in business with Anita Hecht. Her business is Your Life History. Life History Services, the name of the company, and she also wants you to know she does business services as well, business life. Whatever is important to you as your legacy, it could be a business, it could be both, it could be your personal life. That's what she is interested in recording. And working with Senator Proxmire's life had to be interesting, and some of the other cases that you've done, we'll ask you about those. I'm Jody with In Business Magazine.
And I'm Joan Gilman with the Office of Corporate Relations. I think I know the answer to the question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If you don't record your personal history, if you don't look back, what's lost?
A lot of opportunity to know yourself, as well as to educate the future, inform the future, as well as, well, my business tagline, I think, captures it all. It says, honor the past, capture the present, and inform the future. Even if you don't want to talk about yourself at all, there may be people in your life that you really want to honor. So some of my projects are memorial projects or tributes to people who've passed on. And so that's a way to honor the past. Capturing the present, we've just spoken about, you know, the present's going to be the future's history, and to find out from people what their lives are like today is interesting. To take stock, even if you're healthy and you're young, you can start a life history, because it will be interesting 20 years from now to look back. And then to inform the future, I think we can't even know what value these stories will have 100 years from now. All I know is that the very few documents that I have from my grandfather, from my grandmother, they're precious to me, and they're more precious than the physical objects. I often give presentations, so I ask people, how many of you have a will? And everybody raises their hand. Mm-hmm. And then I ask, how many of you have written your life story or recorded it? And maybe one or two people in the crowd does raise their hand. And I think, what does this say about us as a culture, that we're much more focused on passing on our material possessions than passing on our beliefs and what we truly consider to be our identities? And that's what I really encourage people to think about, because I think if you don't record those things, you are lost. A part of what makes you, you, ends. And it does, and we as human beings have the ability to sort of extend consciousness beyond our lifetimes, to make sense out of history and to pass it on. And that's what makes us uniquely human. I think there's this African saying that's also on my website and on my brochure that says, when an elder dies, an entire library burns down.
And I think that's so true, because I think about my dad, and he died very young. He was 55 years old. And I think, I wish I had been able, I was 21 at the time, so I didn't think about these things, you know, to ask him questions. Because at his funeral, people were asking me questions about how these people were related. He knew the entire family history, but nobody else did.
Mm-hmm.
He had it.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
lost.
That was his thing. He would have been a great historian.
Yeah. That's my Irish grandmother.
Right.
I wish I had all of that. Now I'm having to go back and create it. My mother wrote me a letter, and it was a very difficult letter for her. And she happened to have written it actually, on the date, was about 2 days before my youngest son was born. So I don't know whether she was thinking, you know, she's having a baby. She doesn't know very much about her background. But that was the letter that started my search later, because I came back across it at a critical time. And basically, she talked about the really hard things in her life, about traveling and child abuse and being lost and taken out of schools and put across. But there is nowhere else that I ever could have known that she lived in Arizona before they moved to Denver, that she was born in Denver. That helped me find her birth certificate. That letter that she wrote talking to me, first of all, I understood my mother better than I... As an adult, I'm much more forgiving of my mother than I would have been otherwise, and I feel that we're much closer and we're still linked. She's dead now. And I just see that as such a gift from her, that it doesn't have to be, as you said, all the highlights and the good times. Your children usually know about that, or your significant people, you know. It's recorded somewhere. But these things that you struggled with that make you human, those are, it's part of the tapestry, I guess. It's not the whole story either, but it's part of it.
And you can't get a whole life story in a few hours of recording. But, you know, some people, when I give talks, we often discuss the obstacles to doing this, because everybody thinks it's a great idea. Everybody knows somebody they wish they had recorded. So why isn't everybody doing it? And partly it is just time and know-how. I think that's one of the large reasons why people contract with somebody like me. I get it done. I have a plan. I guide them through it. They don't have to master all this stuff. But for women especially, it's hard to talk about ourselves, or it seems vain, or somehow why self-important to record these stories. So we have to have a conversation about what that means. So the fact that you have your mother's letter doesn't make you think that she was vain. You called
Not
it,
at all.
You called it a gift. And I think that if we frame it in terms of a gift to those who are going to come after us, we see it in a truer light.
What's the process?
Well, the process is fairly simple in my mind, because I have a process that I've been using now for many years. It starts off with identifying what the subject is, and usually that's a person. It could be a business. It could be a life-changing event like a terminal diagnosis. Some people want to do an entire family history. Other people want to do just a topic, that a meaningful topic. So that the subject is usually a person and a topic. Then it's about choosing the format, which we've already discussed, whether it's going to be a recording or a transcript or incorporate photos and genealogy. There's all sorts of options. And then what I do is, before I ever record anybody, I go through a fairly extensive pre-interviewing process so that I capture enough information myself to go and design an interview. And that kind of information includes things like immigration history, educational and professional history, who you married, who your kids were, who your parents were, who's alive, who's not alive, and also things that you're willing to talk about or not willing to talk about.
Some people don't want to talk about a divorce, and they don't want you bringing it up.
And that should be respected.
Or a child that was adopted. Could be a host of things.
Yeah, and I think that that also is a time, if you're going to be interviewed, where you are able to communicate what it is that you want to talk about. And so my intention when I'm working with a family and with an individual is to really give them what they want. And I go through some forms where I ask, you know, are there certain stories that should be part of the family lore? Are there certain things that you don't want to talk about? I don't go into recordings cold, because I feel like that's kind of unfair, and it also ends up being pretty shallow. Then I do the oral history interviews, which can be anywhere from 2 to 20 hours in length. I don't sit down for 20 hours with somebody, but we do interviews normally in the comfort of their own home, in a place where they feel safe and where they have their things around them, and we can take breaks as often as they'd like. And it normally goes over several days or weeks. And then I record everything, usually double record everything, so I make sure if one of my pieces of equipment goes...
Yes, I've been there.
that it's captured. I record everything digitally now, and that's been an interesting evolution of my business, because I started out in Betacam video, and now we're up to high-definition video. We'll talk about post-production.
Yeah, because that's, I think, the big...
That's where the magic is to
me. It's sifting and winnowing. Being a live show, we don't have any post-production.
That's the magic. We are in business with Anita Hecht. Life History Services is her business, and so we're learning about what is important in family histories or personal histories or business histories, how to capture it, and hints for getting the most for your money, and then looking at how to turn this into a business, because that's the hardest part. I'm Jody Glenn Patrick, publisher in Business Magazine.
And I'm Joan Gilman, Office of Corporate Relations at the UW. Anita, how do you do the post-production? If you've interviewed for 22 hours, how do you get it down to something that people are willing to watch? Because it, you know, so it's like a series.
Right. This is an interesting question because it also relates to business aspects of recording personal histories. This is a huge budget concern. When people have a limited budget, I say let's capture as many stories. That's where you should put your money. The editing part takes a long time and can often cost a lot of money. So if there's an unlimited, you know, bank roll, then we can do lots of editing. But where I do think it's, what can I say? If I do my preparation well and we have good interviews, there's not a lot that people want to cut out. I give them everything. And if they have 6 hours of their mother on videotape, there's very few people who want only a half an hour of their mother on videotape, especially 10 years after she's passed away. So first of all, they get all the footage. With video, you know, we cut out certain things that are repeated. We may move things around if they're not chronological. We add a lot of photographs and maps and things that supplement the storytelling. I often do an edited, what I call a narrated photo album, where I'll get the oldest photographs to the most recent and have everybody in the family represented. And then as we're looking at the photo on the screen, the person that I'm interviewing is telling me about that person. And that's a discrete section in the video program. Mm-hmm. So they may have a half an hour of photos reproduced and passed out to everybody in the family, but there was only one tiny little 2x3 photo that made it, you know, from World War II in somebody's pocket. All of a sudden, it has the story and it's reproduced. So we edit things together like that. And with the audio, it's a similar type of editing. Oral histories, you know, I try to let that person speak for themselves. So if they want to edit it down to a 15-minute program, then I'm going to work with them collaboratively because I don't feel like it's really my place to decide what to cut out in somebody's life history.
And you can do that now that everything is digitized because they can have a transcript and say, take out that line, and you actually can do that.
Exactly. And with the written memoirs that I do, I actually brought samples for you all to see, even though the listeners can't see them. That's a pretty extensive process when somebody hires me to write a memoir, because then I will do 20 hours of interviewing, then I will transcribe the entire thing, and then I'll turn it into a first-person narrative. And that, do I have any words of wisdom about how I do that? I try and stay true to the person's voice and at the same time think about the reader and make it interesting and have a sense of, you know, an arc and a storyline. And that's where my years of taking writing classes comes into play and reading a lot of memoirs comes into play because I have...
you have to move
along. That's the art of it. You know, I think that's having the feel for who somebody is and what was most important for them. And so, you know, there are chapters. For example, with Bill Proxmire, the idea is hopefully that these interviews will someday be turned into a book. And so there are certain themes that we're going to... that are talked about in every interview. So the fact that the man didn't raise a dime to run a Senate campaign for the last three terms and won, sort of landslide wins, is amazing. How did he do this? How did he capture the Wisconsin mind and populous enough to just get voted into office term after term after term. And in fact, when people sent him money, he would send it back. And the most he spent on his campaigns was on the postage to send back the money. That's unheard of today, that somebody would get into national office without spending any money and not be in anybody's pocket and not be beholden to public, to special interests. Mm-hmm. So this is an amazing story right there. And so take everybody who's talked about that and write a chapter on it.
That's where I think it takes a journalist to do, you know, somebody with a journalist mind, mm-hmm. anyway. It doesn't have to be formally trained, but because this, you know, when you first start in this, you may, politics, I didn't hear that as being a fascination of yours, you know, throughout history. But you've got a historical sense, mm-hmm. and then you learn as you're doing this, and now you still have to turn that into the authority on him. So there's a lot of winnowing, I think, in that. I think that that is a talent, mm-hmm. and I don't think everybody can do it. I really don't.
Yeah.
I know, because I teach a writing class. I can tell you they can't.
Right.
Tips for do-it-yourselfers.
Tips
if
for
I wanted to write a personal history or a history of my family.
So,
but
okay,
I don't have enough money to hire you.
Right. So there's the do-it-yourselfer who wants to do their own, and there's the do-it-yourselfer who wants to interview a family member. So we'll talk about the one who wants to do it themselves. Take a writing class. Mm-hmm. I mean, that actually is a fairly inexpensive way, and it's a guided way. I've taught many guided autobiographical writing classes. I also do personal coaching for people who want to just work one-on-one.
Yep.
And you know, one way to start, this is often what we do at the beginning of a class, is to just think of your life as, you know, zero to now, draw a line, a lifeline, and let's say you put six marks down about significant turning points. There are your six chapters of a book, mm-hmm. you know, and you write on one of those turning points, give yourself a month. What is so daunting for most people is trying to figure out how to put it all together, where did it begin, how am I going to include everything. You know, like most things in life, it's a very, you know, step-by-step process. So, you know, I moved to Madison, Wisconsin from South Texas when I was 8 years old. Huge changing event. Changed the course of my life at an early age. It was not in my control. You know, there are things that happen to us that are in our control and things that are not. That was not. And that impacted many things later.
So and relationships in the moment.
Yes. And so, you know, that would be one of the chapters of my personal history. And I think everybody could do that. Just figure out what are two or three turning points, maybe not even six. You can separate it into decades and say, okay, what happened to me in the 1970s? So that's sort of topical. How do you think about it in topical terms? I also do encourage people to just do it chronologically. I think that's easier for future generations to understand and to navigate because they may have the life stories of several different people in a family or in a business, and they want to see sort of when who entered the picture when. The other tip that I have is if you are doing any kind of recording, please do it in the highest quality, archivally safe format that exists today, because the idea is to create an heirloom that exists beyond our lifetime. So going out and buying a, you know, $1.99 cassette tape that's analog and recording stories, it's just not mm-hmm. that useful or smart in this day and age.
Now, there's YouTube where you can store your personal videos on a huge server and mm-hmm. have it for your use only. It doesn't have to be shared with the mm-hmm. world. Is there an equivalent to YouTube for audio? Because not all of us want to do this.
Oh, that's a good question.
In a video format. And I've been sitting here thinking, you know, I've got pictures of my grandson that my daughter has. You know, she has taken video that we're thinking about.
Well, that's Flickr.
But Flickr.
Put it on Flickr.
Flickr or YouTube.
Snapfish,
either one.
Yeah.
Any of them.
Well, you know, any of the audio recording formats you can turn into podcasts, you know, and I believe you do that with your show,
right.
too. So, you know, I have iTunes. I have a recording from my grandfather in 1970 that I digitized, and now it's on my iTunes, and it's an MP3 file, and I can send it to all my siblings.
Okay. Okay. It was just storage that I was...
No, the store, the off-site storage is really, really important for this stuff. Right.
I think it is, too. With Flickr, I've got over 5,000 photos up there because if my house burned, I don't want to think that that's the history of my family gone.
Right. This is the big challenge for our industry today.
Yeah. Yeah. And where we're going to store all of this, because we can accumulate so much more today than we could ever have accumulated in the history. We take more pictures, but we're out of time.
We are out of time. Thanks so much for joining us, Anita Hecht, Life History Services. Do you have a website? Say it quick.
Lifehistoryservices.com.
Easy enough. Thanks so much for being our guest. Good night, Joan.
Good night, Jody.